Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Welcome back to the Draft Doctors, your home of AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round. In the spirit of Halloween, we're going trick-or-treating this week, sorting through the sweet and delicious treats for our drafts in 2020, and which players could be TPing our draft hopes for the upcoming seasons. I'm Doss. Steve, Cam, and the Statesman join me on the show. Stevie Fizz, is this your first Halloween in the beautiful Ararat?
No, we were here last year. G'day to you, Soy Boy, and g'day to the listeners. No, we were here last year as well, and Mrs. Fizz is actually a big fan of Halloween because it involves dressing up in chocolate, so it's really her bag, not my thing at all.
And it appears paying out Dossie is a regular part of the intro now, Steve, as well. Thanks very much for that. And welcome to you, Cam McLaughlin.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Just a quick canvas for Halloween treats. Snickers, number one. Snickers, number one.
Okay.
What? Oh, come on.
What?
What do you go? What's your chocolate bar of choice?
Yeah, I like Snickers.
Oh. Kind of. Well.
Yeah, my mum was the one that put the apple in the candy bag as well. So enjoy those apples, kids, this Halloween who dropped by my parents' place. And finally, a rare appearance. He's a man who needs no costume this Halloween. It's the Statesman.
Great to be back and introduce my new segment, Stato's Wide Range of Outcomes. Should be a hit and, of course, just goes with the theory that we can all start our own segments whenever we want. Now, there's a real dilemma.
All right, lads, time to go trick-or-treating. Stevie, who's your treat for 2020?
Yeah, so my treat is old man Mark Murphy, the one-time Carlton skipper. I think he's going to provide a fair bit of value in your drafts in 2020, despite him being quite long in the tooth. His averages in 2019 were pretty good. Had the 95.8 Dream Team, 90.6 Supercoach, which makes him the M42 in Dream Team and M57 in Supercoach. So he is really at the back end of the midfielders. But it was a tale of two halves for Mark Murphy. Post-bye, he was really in the guts for Carlton in the centre square. Averaged 106 Dream Team, 107 from that point on, just playing a pure inside midfield role and really performed pretty well. And that's kind of why I've got good vibes about him, is I've got to feel like the new coach is going to continue in that role. Carlton didn't necessarily add anything of an inside midfielder in the trade period. So if you're cagey about him continuing that role, you're expecting it to come from internal competition, whether that's one of the younger guys coming through. I find that hard to see. I think, you know, unless there was something completely amiss with someone last year, I'm pretty confident in Mark Murphy continuing that role. He does also have a first quarter injury match in that season where he scored, I think it was like 10 or 18, depending on your format. If you take that match out, he's actually averaging 100 Dream Team. So he moves up the list quite substantially there as well. So it's not like he was terrible before the bye. So even if he doesn't continue that role, he's not going to burn you at where he's getting drafted. So I feel pretty confident with Mark Murphy and feel he might be a nice little M4 pick in your drafts.
Yeah, and you did really hit the nail on the head there, Steve, with the internal competition. Paddy Dow, of course, probably your biggest competition there, and it's going to be a real stretch to see him get significant meet time. But no, he did kill it in the second half of the season, and obviously the coaching change, a big help for his 2020 season. Cam, there's some dog poo on our doorstep, and we're about to step in it. Who's tricking us in 2020?
Yeah, this is, look, it might be a little bit controversial given that Statesman's actually on the pod, but first poo on the doorstep is Toby Green. It's probably a bit vanilla as a choice because I think, you know, there's every chance that Toby Green is going to go worse than he did this year given the amazing last six games that he had playing pure midfield. He's going to go into next season listed as the top averaging forward because he should retain that forward status. And as we've said before, a lot of the top performers from this year are expected to lose it. We know he can score really damn well when he gets in the guts, But when he's playing predominantly forward, there's a noticeable difference in scoring. He moved into the midfield exactly when Canelio got injured this year. And looking at the splits before and after tells the exact story that I want to convey. So we have pre-Canelio injury, he was 80.3 AFL Fantasy and 77.5 Supercoach versus post-Canelio injury. Sorry, it's my son in the background. He is pumped about Toby Green shitness in next year. But post-Canelio injury is 123 AFL Fantasy and 121 Supercoach. So just went absolutely mental in that six-game period. It obviously led to an inflated overall average of 98.4 and 93.9. And I think you're probably going to find someone within your league that maybe hasn't paid enough attention or doesn't have the great memory span or hasn't done enough research going into next year that will probably take him off the table early. But Statesman, given that you're here, where would you feel comfortable drafting Toby Green next year?
Oh, as my F1, of course, because he's a fucking gun. Now, I do understand your point. He's not going to get that much time in the midfield when they're a healthy list, especially at the start of the season, it's fair to say that. But I also believe he started very slowly because he was coming back from injury. So if he does have a full pre-season and he played so well in that midfield, that I see him predominantly playing that forward role. Yes, I agree with that. But I still think he's one that they're actually going to throw in and actually give some time. So I'm quite happy to have a little shot here with you if you want to go the average 85 mark over and above, because I'd be quite comfortable saying that he's going to get between the 85 and 95 average as a predominant forward. And I think with the amount of quality leaving our forward, that still gives you an F1 and F2. Yeah, he might have some games that disappoint a little bit, so his ceiling may not be there and his floor will be there, but I think on average he has given us an average of 90 just playing as a forward, and I think he's quite capable of doing that again. I think he'll continue to do it because he's a very good player, Cam.
So I'm licking my lips here a little bit because I, you know...
85.
You said between 85 and 95, and then you said 90 that he's done before. So I'll split the difference and go 90.
No, we'll go 87.5.
Well, that's a bit under 90.
The great...
No, I said he'll give us an average of 85 to 95. So that's my range.
I think 87.5 is a pretty solid line.
The great Australian cricketing number, 87. Just cricket references.
Cam, are you going to do it? 87.5.
If you make it 88, I'll do it.
Done.
Oh, our first preseason bet, and it's real early here.
Can I just touch in on Cam's thing? Because I think the truth is somewhere in the middle of the guy's arguments. I think
agree.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen Toby Green average 91 Dream Team, 96 Supercoach, playing as that forward with the upside. But if you, like, say he's the top listed forward, which is possible, I'm not sure that's actually going to shake out. Someone could be drafting him in the back end of the first round, and that's where I think he is a trick.
Yeah, correct. Yep. Yeah, I agree. If you go on the back half of the year, you know how we get excited with these back half of the year players. Angus Brayshaw was one of those in 2018. You get very, very excited. So, yes, he's probably going to be drafted a little bit earlier than what he should, Cam. I'll give you that.
He might be someone you look to trade off someone who did draft him after a few weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
With the chip in the middle, though, do you think at some point the G-dubs are going to have to run these guys like your Haitleys and your Caldwells through there? Because when's the, like, you know, the go-home factor at G-dubs as well? It's not fully gone there.
What?
Are they going to have to...
G-dubs.
What?
What?
G-dubs.
Yeah.
What's that?
Really? Is that not a thing? Surely.
Oh, my God.
It's like one of those, you know, those pitches that only certain people under a certain age can
hear. That's like when Jono...
Doss, I heard what you're putting down there. These two old codgers heard nothing.
That's like when
I thought you were going at the take. Anyway, I've got more on that later. So, Statesman, your treat, please.
Yes, and Doss, I don't mean to upset you, but it is not Paddy Dow. It's actually his replacement. Jack Martin is my treat for 2020. New club, new start for arguably the best junior that's come through in the modern game. This lad can play, and we've only seen glimpses of his real talent. And why? It's because he plays for Steve's and Doss's main team, the Gold Coast Suns. It's not the right culture through his time and not the right ball use to get the best out of his game. At his best, he can do a great score build. 20-plus possessions, 6 marks a game on average, hits the scoreboard and doesn't mind a tackle, averaging 4.9 last year and 5.5 this year per game. His best season was in 2017 when they won 6 games. He played 22 and had 6 tons, so he showed a decent ceiling, 4 of those being over the 110 mark. He has shown that ceiling, and he's only 24 years of age. Working off some bulls, whether he gets to Carlton is a bit of a question mark at the moment, but if you think the Paddy Cripps types, he has the chance to average over 90, making him relevant as a mid only, but potentially as a forward mid. He will be in the discussion as a top 10 forward, but likely to be not picked up before round 8. That is a real treat.
Wowee. Going with that pre-draft, he's gone the treat and he hasn't even actually found a team yet. That's a very interesting take. Statesman, does anyone have any also some takes on Jack Martin?
Not really. I was going to ask about the midfield thing, like his positional status, and I was pretty on board with him only being a mid. So do you think he's still, you know, obviously if you think he's going 90 plus, he's still worth a back end pick?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what will happen if he does end up at Carlton, he ends up getting the forward status in Ultimate Footy at round 3, round 6. So it won't take that long anyway. So I still see him predominantly being that forward mid player. But he's got so much class, especially on the side like Carlton. So you talk about a Mark Murphy, and you're spot on the mark. He's starting in the guts. David Teague showed that. You put the quality where the quality should be. But that's the type of beautiful rotation where you go and rest Mark Murphy up forward and give Martin 5 minutes a quarter.
Hey, Statesman, let's hypothetically assume he is going to Carlton. Would he affect anyone else's score build for next season if he does land there? Is there anyone you can sort of, you know, pick out of the bunch that could maybe drop a bit? And don't say it.
Hashtag Dow out. That's why I mentioned him. No, look, Paddy Dow will have an improved year next year. There's no doubts about that. Sort of the one, depending on what else happens during this offseason, because it looks like Moons might go there as well, is Zach Fisher's role might be a little bit questionable. I think he's a good player long term. But we saw the back end of the year, he stopped having those midfield minutes and the Murphys of this world and the Kernos of this world got back in there. So he really dropped away at the second half of the year. So I can't see with someone the quality of Jack Martin coming in that he's going to get increased opportunities in the midfield.
Does it slow down someone like a Sam Walsh? It just means instead of going up, he goes the same?
Yeah, I think he had such an exceptional year. The second year is going to be very hard to repeat the first. So I think we need to temper, but you hold on to him in a keeper. He's going to be fine. He's going to be a magnificent ball magnet. But it's the third, fourth and fifth year you should see another jump.
All right, I've got a trick. I really want to tread carefully here. I've already taken one scalp in Jake Lloyd this offseason. So before I get into this take, I'd like to acknowledge it's hot fire, and this player may end up being one of the best defenders in all of fantasy next season. I needed this disclaimer because Zachariah Williams.
How's that hot soy boy?
The number one defender in AFL fantasy in the back half of 2019. Wowee. He missed the entire 2018, though. Bounced back to average 93 AFL fantasy points for 2019, including the 105 post-buys. I apologise, I haven't gone into the Supercoach numbers on this one. But coming back into that season, that team next season, we've got Heath Shaw re-upping. You got Nick Haynes still going strong. So the kick-ins are still never going to be fully taken advantage of. Ward missed the whole season. Cornelio, Kelly and DeBoer all missed time later in the year. And coincidentally, that is also when Williams did go huge. So add to this, you got Perryman developing into a ball winner, probably stuck down back as well. And Williams may have had slightly inflated numbers for 2019. The thing is, he actually doesn't find a heap of the uncontested ball either, perhaps due to the stacked squad at GWS or just his love for the contest. So he averaged 9 contested possessions and 14 uncontested possessions. So that's third for contested possessions among defenders, but 13th for uncontested ball. So there's quite a few guys ahead of him in that regard, like your more elite defenders in our AFL fantasy formats, like your Jake Lloyds, your Jack Crisps. Those guys are way up there for uncontested ball. So Zach Williams is kind of unique in that sense, sort of like your Brody Smith type in the uncontested, contested splits. If he doesn't get those stints through the midfield, which we saw with a much healthier GWS, wouldn't shock me if he regresses slightly in 2020 rather than exploding into the uber premium that he pretty much showed in the second half of 2019. So I just got a list here of the midfield players for 2020 for GWS. And I also sort of want to touch base with you guys. We sort of spoke about it a little bit before. It's really going to be interesting who fits in there. So you've got Taranto, Cornelio, Kelly, Hopper, DeBoer, Ward, Green, and he was actually ahead of Williams in the back half of the year as well. Williams got less CBAs than him. Perryman, is he going to get stints in there? And then you've got guys like Haitley, Caldwell, and this new draftee, Tom Green, I believe.
Green.
Green they've got to bring in as well. And they're comparing him to a Patrick Cripps. Is he ready to go in as well? So I'm just worried about who's going to be sacrificing time. And if Williams does go back into that pure defensive role with some of the names back there, and you add Perryman, I think, to that mix as well, unless he just plays a pure wing. Is he going to be able to back it up? Is this a ridiculous hot take? Or is Williams sort of around where he is at the moment, his average, or do you think he can go up or down? What do you guys think?
Whether it's a hot take or not, I'm a little bit unsure, but I don't dispute that you've drunk some of Cam's Kool-Aid and looked at a really easy option, but I don't disagree that he should lose his ceiling. But whether he gets a confirmed role off the halfback flank where he's allowed to run, which may mean he gets a decent average anyway, I think that's the big point. But it's a good problem to have for the GWs. And I'm sorry, I should have mentioned with Jack Martin, so he's either going to be at the GCs or the MEs or the CAs. So, I've gun midfield group. That's why they're going to be right up there on the ladder for the next 5 to 10 years. And it's a good problem to have. I think what happened with Green and Williams does mean that when things aren't going well for them, that those type of players will get a run because they're different.
I'll just quickly touch on the super coach for old Zed Dubs. He actually showed a higher ceiling as a defender. So I don't actually think, you know, the scores weren't too dissimilar. Like, I didn't actually break down the averages, but you can just look at the list and go, yeah, same sort of thing. So I don't think it affects him as much in that format.
Yeah, I actually genuinely did think this was a hotter take just because in the first half of the year as well, when he didn't score as well, he had about 3 injury-affected games, and he actually came into the season off like a slight injury in the JLT as well. So, you know, if he actually performed all year, it would have been like almost a ton average that he put up. And I know they missed a lot of guys in that team, but still sort of, I mean, he is for me... I mean, I called him a trick, but I'm still super high on him. But I'm very interested to see what happens with that just stacked team. You could probably look at, I mean, somebody else could take a hit and it might be one of those midfielders. And I'm just sort of ignoring that and maybe looking at, like you said, the easy one with the Toby Green and Williams who just popped in there late in the year last year.
I will say it always depends on role. So at the moment, he doesn't really have to close down. but that may change at some point. So the one thing he's got is great pace. Now, if the team's getting cut up by someone that has great pace, that's when, hey, you need to close down here. He hasn't shown a natural flair to do it, but maybe that's something he needs to build into his game. So that's the only thing I'll be mindful of if he starts looking like he's having closed down roles. And I don't know what Heath Shaw's mix is there, but I would say the GWs seem to play a bit of a team defence rather than an individual besides one or two of the tools.
One other thing to consider is that they're losing a couple of wing players in Tomlinson and Deledio. So it's not like I know there's a squeeze there, but it might just be a ripple effect more than anything.
Yeah, and they also have a bunch of good goal-kicking mids that can float forward. So it could really just affect people like Daniel Lloyd and a few of the smalls they already have up forward.
It's going to be interesting coming 2020. Stevie Fears, let's go with another trick. Who have you got?
Yeah, well, hopefully my hot take's hotter than your soy-flavoured hot take. Dossie, what an appropriate intro for the show. That was just what was the late show thing? It was like being flogged with a wet newspaper. So I've got Tom Mitchell as being a trick this year. Whoa. So had an obscene 2017 and 2018 period. Last time we saw him, he was the Brownlow medalist. And he averaged over 35 disposals in both of those seasons, numbers we just haven't seen. Broke the disposals record, averaged 127 Dream Team, 129 Dream Team in 2017, 2018, 119 Supercoach, and then 129. And whenever someone sets a record, there's a good chance they come back to earth the following season. And I think, Stato, the numbers you have regarding Brownlow medal winners is pretty well justified, let alone Brownlow medal winners who are coming off a broken leg and a missed season. So, like I said, what do we know about records? They regress. Hawthorn saw a 50-point drop as a team in their fantasy scoring. We know it was funny, actually. Fantasy scoring, it seemed like everyone said it got it fell off a cliff, and it may have across the league, but Collingwood, as a team, were obscene this year. They almost scored 1,700 a game, which is a massive jump on their 2018. But the big story for me is at Hawthorn, the midfield is just so much better than the last time we saw Tom Mitchell. You're looking at James Walpole going into his third season. We know what a breakout he had this year. They've added Tom Scully. They've added Chad Wingard, who was playing midfield in the second half of the year. Not sure that continues, but it may. And you certainly might get time there. And you got another full season out of Yeager O'Meara. So there's a lot more quality this time around for Tom Mitchell to share the disposals with, instead of the likes of Will Langford, who was his teammate last time he was playing. Sorry, Will. I know you're a big fan of the show. And this is all without to say that I know the Hawthorn medical team has this mythical status, but he's coming back from a broken leg, and we've seen players come back from a broken leg and they just haven't been the same. And I can remember Nathan Brown, and I looked up the numbers. The year he broke his leg, he was averaging 100 Dream Team, 121 Supercoach. He'd kicked 34 goals and was averaging 20 touches. And the next year after that, he came back, and I know it's mid-year, hadn't done a preseason, was averaging 60 and 65 as Dream Team and Supercoach. The year after that was 82, 92. Never really got back to those numbers, and he always missed matches, was always out. So I think Titch is going to be a really hard player to rank, and it's probably one of the things I hate about this show, or having to put out rankings, I should say, is that I don't think I'm likely to draft Tom Mitchell, yet I still have to rank him. And it's going to be hard not to rank him high, yet above where I think he'll finish, if that makes sense. Because there is a little bit of groupthink when you do this sort of thing. Like, it's
No doubt.
One of the unfortunate things.
Yeah, actually, just to back up the point on the broken leg, because I was pretty interested in Tom Mitchell and thought that he'd be sort of top five next year. And I had a look at Nat Fyfe from his 2016 season. He played five games for the year, and he averaged 98 and 105 before he broke his leg. And if you take out that injury game, he was going 108 and 118. When he returned, he regressed by an order of magnitude of about 10 points in both formats for the entire year, which he played the 20 games. So he still missed two games in that year as well, or three games in that year. So I'd kind of expect some kind of regression from Tom Mitchell, from those airy stats to, you know, a little bit less as he sort of works his way back into it.
I think it's a combination of everything that absolutely terrifies me. Like, this team is just so much better. I think Hawthorn will be knocking on the door of the top four next year. And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe Tom Mitchell's just that good. But I find it hard to believe. And I think he'll be ranked. And I think he'll go in top five in basically every draft.
Yep.
I'll just weave in a question from Brennan here. And that's Let's Talk Warpedo. He hit us up on the Twitter. So we might as well talk about it now while we're talking about the Hawks. And what do you think with the Warpedo next year, Steve, playing alongside Tom Mitchell with those 30-odd disposals, if he manages to back up his 35 he's had a couple of years in a row prior to injury?
Yeah, if we look at a player's strengths and weaknesses, we can look at the Warpedo pretty clearly and say his strength is winning the contested ball and his weakness is his kicking efficiency, if we were being fair. So he might take a hit in the Dream Team format, might not take as much of a hit in the Supercoach, but I don't think you can inject what's been the best fantasy midfielder we've seen for a long time, maybe ever, and not have that affect you.
All right, well, Cam, sweeten things up a little. Another treat, please.
Yeah, no surprises here that it's a Cats player, but it's for a very good reason. Don't hold it against me. It's old man Joel Selwood, the perennial ducker. So he was, he's hiding on your draft boards at an average of 78.8 AFL fantasy and 85.5 super coach, the lowest in his career for the fantasy side and the second lowest in his career for the super coach side. So his numbers pretty much across the board were down this year due to that switch to the wing. What we got to see, though, in the semi-final and the prelim final was that he was thrown back in the midfield. And not only that, the Cats looked better when he was there. His fantasy scoring went through the bloody roof, with both games scoring over 113 in both formats. With old baby legs coming in, baby legs Jack Stevens, and a host of youngsters capable of playing on the wing, I think we'll see Joel moving back permanently on the inside where he can be his most damaging. And therefore, you know, going into next year, there is a very big chance that owners this year are turned off. And potential other people in the draft haven't looked that far down the boards to see this high achiever over his career. They might think he might be a bit past it. I reckon he's still got another year left in him.
Hey, just quickly with Joel Selwood, I've been thinking about this a bit since we sort of brought it up, that it could potentially be another Joel Selwood, random Joel Selwood season again at this age. But I'm just thinking, do you think that with the Cats, it's apparent that it seems to be more of a load management type thing? Like, Nick Nat to me is the obvious load management thing in the league. He only plays, you know, your 50-60% game time, which is so obvious to see that that's a load management thing. With Joel Selwood, do you think just playing him on a wing is simply just to keep him out of the contest and keep him sort of fresh for finals? Like, it seems to me that that would be your major reason. Give other guys a go as well, not ruin your opportunity cost for the young players as well throughout the year, but when it comes time, when it's finals time, he's back in there. Do you think they'll keep him on the wing during the regular season again for most of the time, or move him back in there?
I actually think he was quite exposed on the wing. Like, he just didn't look like a very good player there. He's not fast, so he gets beaten for speed, which means he's not getting to the ball first most of the time. And then he'd be getting run around a lot of the time. Like, I just don't think it's a good position to play him in for his strengths. I agree with you that they were probably putting him on the wing as a load management thing this year. I don't think they have the option next year. I think, you know, if you're going to be serious, and they're clearly thinking that they can win a flag in the next 2 years by bringing in Steven and Jenkins, because otherwise why are you bringing in 30-year-olds into your team? I think they're going to make him, or they'll want him in the middle as much as possible.
All right. Anyone else got any quick thoughts on Jack Steven before we move on to another trick?
Joel Selwood.
Selwood. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he could be unders, but I also think Geelong could go different ways. Like they could just go, "Hey, danger, you're going full mid again." I don't know.
Yeah.
What about Menegola? Yeah, Menegola missed most of the year. He could get more mid. You know what I mean? There's options for Geelong.
Yeah, I definitely think there's options, but I still think the best option is Joel. Again, it's like you look at.
The problem is, it's hard to root for Joel Selwood.
Why?
Well, because he's the villain. And not a fun villain, like an evil villain. If you're not a cat.
Why is he evil?
I don't want to say it on air because I'm not cut. I don't cut the pod as much as I used to. Fucking hate that guy.
Let's go, Statesman.
I fucking hate that guy.
Statesman, your trick for 2020 is?
Yeah, so I've drunk a little bit of the Cam Kool-Aid as well, to be honest. So it's a bit of an obvious pick. So my trick is Jade Gresham. Now, I want to make this clear. I do rate him. I just don't rate his chances of getting so much inside midfield time in 2020. The Saints have Seb Ross, Jack Steele, Hunter Clark, Dan Hannanbury, Jack Billings, Luke Dunstan, even though I think Luke's more of a backup, so probably not in the best 22, but ready to, if one of them gets hurt, come in. They've also brought in Zach Jones and Brad Hill. I would expect that they will have Hill on 1 week and Billings on the other. I think they're the two outside users that they want to actually have the ball in the hands. And the others will rotate through the guts. So this means Gresham's time in the guts will reduce dramatically unless injuries provide him more opportunities. So I really see him as being the sixth or seventh in the midfield rotation. So I'm not saying he won't get some midfield rotation. He just won't get anywhere near as much as he had this year. So it should mean his scoring will be reduced to about the mid-70s. For a forward after hitting the mid-80s this year. And because of his average, he is likely to go 5 to 10 rounds earlier than he should. He hasn't shown a massive ceiling. He hasn't got a lot of tons on the board, but he can be a consistent scorer even when he's sharing the forward and midfield role. So I'm not saying he's not draftable by any stretch of the imagination. You're just not going to get that continual rise as a few owners would have expected from Jay Gresham.
I want him to be draftable. I really like Jay Gresham. I think he's an awesome player. I think that he's going to play that forward, small forward role next year. I kind of agree with your statement. He probably doesn't fit well in that midfield group. But is he going to be a forward mid next year? He's going to be a mid only, I think.
No, he played enough forward. So if you actually go through fan footy and have a look at all his starting positions, he spent a lot of time forward this year. So he was still would have covered easily the 35%. So he's going to be a mid forward.
Okay, brilliant.
You said a couple of interesting things just throughout your little
Of course, I do every sentence.
Interesting in the sense, I mean, Dunstan for them, if he's not one of their best 22 now, Steve and I and Jono and occasionally as well, we were doing the CBAs and Dunstan was a regular massive attendee in there as well. So that just frees up space for people in there. But you also mentioned you thought Billings and Hill were going to be the two wings. And I heard on some other podcast, I apologize, I can't remember which one, but it was to do with Zach Jones. He was rated like the fourth best wing after the bye or something in the competition. Do you think he's now not going to play that outside role? We were debating it last week where we think he's going to be. Is he going to be more inside, in your opinion, to leave those other two out?
In and out.
Okay.
So the burst, what he's got is burst pace. So when you actually have the bounce of the ball, he's one that can get the footy and actually clear the space and get to the forwards quick, which is key what you want to have in the 666. But what he's also capable of doing is actually being able to run into space, therefore create an option. So therefore he becomes both an in and out player, almost the ideal player that can play inside and outside.
One other name you didn't even mention was someone who championed data, you know, gush over, and that's Jack Sinclair. and he just sounds out of the mix.
I looked at it, but it was just another name I was going to throw in. I think I would have Gresham ahead of Sinclair, but
I'm not even talking about him being. I don't even mean draftable. I mean, it just seems like they've got a whole heap of guys rather than. I mean, Brad Hill might be an elite wingman, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I hate the Saints. There's more questions than answers.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, a treat to finish off. And to leave a nice taste in your mouth, I have the perfect solution. It's a cheeky bit of Scotty Lysette. We pumped about my last treat, guys. I can see your faces. Not too pumped, but it's a very delicious treat. Paddy Ryder, gone. That's the big thing here. We got Lysette. His overall average with Paddy Ryder in the side, 74.9 AFL fantasy and 92.3 Supercoach. Pretty solid Supercoach numbers. Lysette solo, I will admit, limited sample size, only the four games. So we had 96.75 AFL fantasy and 115 Supercoach. And the one game with Lysette Laddams, which is arguably his biggest contestant this year for a bit of the solo ruck time, 140 AFL fantasy and 165 Supercoach points. Yes, it was against Timmy English. But anyway, I'm pretty...
Is this segment over?
Pretty pumped about Lysette next year. The only thing is, I'm assuming, is this going to be a solo, a pure ruck status next year for Scotty Lysette? Or did he spend enough time forward with Paddy Ryder to get the dual status statesman? What do you think?
I think it's more. I've got a question: who supports him? So, who is the relief ruck?
I guess. Well, because they got rid of Billy Frampton as well. So, is it just going to go back to a Westhoff type player or Charlie Dixon, or are we going to get Peter Laddams in the side with him? That's the big thing. So, if Laddams
how
is
old's
there,
Westhoff?
Oh, he's long in the tooth now. 33 next year, is he?
And how reliable fitness-wise and health-wise and injury-wise is Charlie?
Not very, statesman.
So who would be the other options? And you've got one aging that's probably better playing a sort of a loose wing that can roll down defence and maybe pinch hit up forward every now and again. And your main key forward who has an injury concern. So probably putting him in the ruck is not probably the best thing. Who would you suggest would therefore
I would say
fill that role?
Solo Lysette.
So there'll be about 15 centre bounces in the game where Port have no ruckman?
You're making a valid point here, but I mean, I saw Laddams, he could be ready next year. I mean, he played three or four games this year and looked pretty good, and he had maybe one really good game and the other two were sort of meh. But do you think he's ready next year?
Laddams, is he a player that can hold down a forward, key forward position during a game? Or maybe someone like a Lysette who actually won a premiership doing that role? Just a question for you, Doss. Just thinking out loud.
Do you say is there a sole Lysette scenario next year though?
I don't see it. And I think your big problem is that not only has Frampton gone, you've also lost another guy who does do ruck work in Dougal Howard. So we were discussing this before you joined the call because you were, you know, so late about how it looked like and we were sitting here going, well, Lysette's been the forward who's gives the chop out. Like, a port seriously contending next year?
A lot of things will have to go right.
I think Port tipped their hand as to how they felt their list was going when they brought in all the first-round picks.
Yeah.
I actually think it's a fine treat, though. Because you look at Lysette, I don't think you're going to have to pay overs for him in a draft, and I think he has potential upside even with Laddams in the team. So I still think it's a valid treat. Is he going to be a top five ruckman? I think he's listed as a top five ruckman now, like from last year. Probably not. Top seven, maybe. I think he can be still pretty serviceable.
There is a world where Doss is right and he is a top five ruckman. There is a world.
Yeah.
It just all depends. I'm just asking those questions of saying who's there to support him, because you still need to have – I mean, even Sean Grigg supported Nank the Tank. So it wasn't the –
I think you had ruckman. That the wrong way around, mate.
Yeah, you're probably right. But still there needs to be that person that supports him. There is a world where you're right, Doss.
Wide range of outcomes. No, and it really is. Look, I mean, because if he splits the – like he might split the role 1 week and have it solo the next, and that's going to be – and look, if you don't spend a high pick on him
– and then drop the next one.
And that's absolutely possible. Like if you have him, he might be a frustrating own despite the fact he might be fine overall throughout the season.
Look, I saw Big Scotty Lysette being the face of the new Guernsey, and it got me excited. They had him out there. Koshy got him out there in
fucking
the new Koshy. Digs.
Fuck Koshy. What? No, I want to get on this. Like, look at the NBA. The NBA is getting absolutely dragged over this China thing. Why are we not taking down this narcissistic motherfucker? Like, taking him to the – oh, is it just the plucky young guy, you know, getting in on the market?
Oh, it's a good point, Stevie.
Yeah. Free to bet. Free to bet. No, I hate Koshy, man. People hate Koshy. Port Adelaide people don't like Koshy. It's a safe line to tread.
Listen, I got to quickly just talk about Lysette, though. I reckon this has got to be...
You've been doing that for 8 minutes.
Look, it's got to be the biggest case of a premiership hangover, though. I was looking at it. The first... 9 games, he averaged like 68 AFL fantasy, post by 98. And that's like stats with and without Ryder. So I still think there's room for growth regardless of whoever the hell he's playing with in there. He only finished with like an 83 average in AFL fantasy. I'm more looking at AFL fantasy, and particularly if he does get a forward ruck status. But, you know, if he's a pure ruck, it's probably going to be a lot harder to do.
Just look at the teams he lit up. They're the shit ruck teams. It's the Bulldogs. It's the Cats. Everyone scores massive against the Cats. It's not the good teams, if that makes sense. I just think he'll struggle against the good rucks, even if he has that role. Yes, he'll be good against the shit rucks, like everyone's good against the shit rucks.
Anyway, I didn't think my most fire take of the pod was going to be related to Scotty Lysette, but there you go. It was. And we'll get on to some questions from social media. You can follow us at The Draft Doctors on Twitter and Instagram, or find us on Facebook. We have a few questions coming through, and we've got We Got Big Cocks asks,
did you know,
trick or treat?
Did you know Scott Lysette was the 5th ranked ruck in Supercoach?
I knew he was very good. Trick or treat? Chera, get a wing now, finally. That's the first part of his question. Does he get a wing?
Possibly. He gets more opportunities. I don't know whether that's on the wing, but he gets more opportunities. He has a third-year breakout coming.
Akers.
How big that is a question mark.
Does Akers get on the other wing? Statesman, your quick take on Akers. We know you've been a huge fan for a long time. Moving to Freo, what's your thoughts?
Exactly the same line. He gets a lot more opportunities, whether he gets a bit of inside being the bigger body, sort of longer-term Mundy-type replacement, or gets on the wing is the question mark. I think they want him on the wing at the moment. So, yes, he goes up.
B. Ellis at the Suns. Is this a trick? Steve, you sort of touched on this last week, I think.
What did I say?
You said no good, I believe, because they're not a good team on the outside and he's really relies on uncontested ball.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Probably depends on his status. If he gets the defender status, he's probably still relevant. But if he's a midfield only, then.
Defender Ellis season.
This is still We Got Big Cocks. He asked about 10 questions. Hearn thought he was a trick last year too. Is Hearn a trick this year?
Hearn's interesting to me because his second half wasn't hot fire, if I remember.
No. And soft tissue.
So.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah. I don't think... I don't,
how old's he going into next?
I don't think he'll kill
like 33.
You.
33.
He's old, man.
What about Devin Smith? He's wondering about this. What's going to happen with him? Guess he could be a trick or treat. What have you guys got him as?
The only way is up at the moment.
I think it's really hard to get around Devin Smith. Like I was just talking, actually, he's really in the same boat as Tom Mitchell in a lot of ways. We saw, although they haven't, you know, arguably Essendon haven't really improved their midfield dramatically as many people maybe thought they might try to do. Actually, thought Will Brodie would be someone they'd be targeting, but anyway, last time I know he played a few games this year, but really the last time we saw him play, he set the record for tackles in a season. You know, tackles have gone down across the board, harder to repeat. You know, Andrew McGrath's moved onto a wing, so there goes 12 possessions a game.
Tommy Cutts into the team.
I think it's really hard to get super excited, but I mean, he should be a mid 80s, low 80s at the worst.
Can I just correct Cam's call? Tommy Cutts is onto the squad, not the team.
He's onto mate. He's onto my bedroom wall.
Actually, Rust during the week wanted my face cropped onto Tommy Cutts' shirtless body, but I don't know. I think a shirtless selfie from Dossie would yield pretty similar results, though. Anyway, McLean, now that they have Bruce, what's McLean's output as well from We Got Big Cox?
Not the same position, just quietly.
Yeah, I just think he means just another forward to contend with because McLean's obviously pushed out of the midfield rotations. Any thoughts on McLean?
Preseason watch.
Toby McLean.
Indeed.
I think he's really hard to draft.
Yeah.
Get around role the dependent. Superior McLean, Big Dossie, over in Sydney. Russ asks, trick or treat? Hunter Stevenson, season fantasy average of 81 with an 88 and 77 upon return from suspension. Does he have a third-year breakout in him, or is this it?
That's roll. Yeah. I don't know if you can really break out as a forward pocket once you've started this well so early. And I can't see him getting up the ground. They've just got way too much depth through that midfield.
I think the other problem is even when you consider if he's just playing in the forward line, he's probably the third option. Like surely if they're kicking inside, they're looking at Dugowie and Jamie Elliott.
I tell you what though, Collingwood as well it's almost a mirror of what you've got at GWS or G-Dubs. The similar sort of high scoring teams as well. We've got Beams, Dugowie, and Adams all missing time throughout the year that, you know, if they come back healthy as well. I mean, GWS is probably slightly more stacked coming back, but who's going to be slipping in and out? And there's no way that Stevenson can play in the midfield and sort of get that third-year breakout, as I think you're alluding to. But he's surely going to be a long-term keeper and potentially down the line slip into that role.
I still think he's going to have quite a good year for C-dubs.
This is the worst thing you've ever brought to the show, Doss. You've brought some shit takes, but this is fucking horrendous.
I've called them that for ages. I'm sure the listeners will get around me. It's a regular thing. All right,
Doss,
another trick or treat.
We are polling this. We are polling this and... It is the worst.
Miller time. Trick or treat? Fizz's new gym membership. He says he feels your pain. He's in a similar boat. Running year was recently interrupted by bursitis. Damn you, being old. Stevie, how's the gym going?
Back at the gym. I used to go to the gym quite a lot in my younger days, trying to get the ladies' attention. Loved the protein, unlike yourself, Doss. So I don't know about a shirtless pick. But look, no, the gym sucks and I hate the gym and the gym is absolutely the worst. I'm very fortunate that my workouts aren't particularly long. There's a lot of rest in between my sets. Thank Christ for that. The only problem is I hate signing up at the gym because, believe it or not, in Ararat there aren't many options. Ararat was actually on the biggest loser as the town, the fattest town in Australia. So not a lot of great fitness options. So had to sign my life away for a 12-month membership and I'm fucking ruining every moment of going there. I hate it. It is the WOAT.
And just get the lawyers ready to go, because it takes about 6 months through the lawyers to cancel the membership.
Yeah.
So if you don't start at the 6 month point, you're paying for an extra second
year. Yeah, actually, long story short, I actually worked in a gym, and because I used to love going to the gym and I loved the fitness thing, and I worked there for a little while, and I went, oh, this is just one big sales pitch. You don't actually give a shit about people.
Yep.
So I got out pretty quick. And no, well, look, you know, it's a long way back, and I'm determined to run my goddamn marathon. And actually, that's why I tweeted the other day. I feel, you know, those athletes who have multiple long-term things, and we've just seen Paddy McCartan mutually part ways with St Kilda. I have more respect for them today than I did 10 weeks ago, because I sort of thought, oh, you know, you're getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do a job, but the mental thing is pretty real. So they're dealing with a lot more than me. Good for them if they make it back.
Good luck in your continuing endeavours at the gym, Stevie, anyway. And surely that's the fattest town in Australia with a PH, the fattest. Now, we've also got one final question from RFC2017. Here's a question. What's the best spread / topping for crumpets?
Yeah, this is it.
Wow.
This is actually one of our
I've got a split decision. Oh, is it really?
Yeah. It's a big in-joke, the crumpet thing. But you go. You go, Stato. Right. You go, Stato.
It's a split decision for me. Vegemite or peanut butter.
No, that Vegemite is pure ass on a crumpet. but the correct decision for this particular question asker is it's a good dose of leg spin, I'd say. Loves a bit of leg spin. But the answer is honey.
No.
Honey.
Well, see, I don't do the sugar bit, that's why.
Yeah, can we just say straight butter and a lot of it? Western Star spreadable butter.
No dairy. Doss would be no dairy either, would he?
Yeah, a bit of almond milk for me.
Oh, my God.
Yep,
how's your diet going, Cam? Is butter on your diet?
Butter is off the diet, but weigh-in day today, 5 kilos down in 4 weeks. So I'm enjoying the gym, but yeah.
How far off the Tommy Cut selfie are you there, Cam?
I reckon when it comes back round to my dare, I'll be ready.
Are you are you coming down to Melbourne if the traders do a show this year?
Yeah.
We'll have a rig off.
Rig off.
All right, thanks for listening throughout the off-season. Subscribe or follow us wherever you get your podcasts, with shows dropping on Wednesdays every week in the off-season. If you want to help us out, you can leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We're aiming for 250 ratings at the moment, and we have another review from across the week.
I see it all now. You go. This is an after-pod discussion. I see what's happening.
We've got this.
Review. Oh, so I know where you're heading with that. But no, it's got nothing to do with skateboards.
Bullshit.
That's an in joke, listeners. We will reveal more in the future.
Review entitled Tony Statesman Hawk. It reads, been listening for a while, just too lazy to give you guys a review. But I really want to see Statesman on a skateboard. Statesman, thoughts?
Yeah, I'll take a photo of me on a skateboard. Done.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.